This is John Little from DFW's only all-news morning show, the KRLV Morning News. Keep listening. We'll tell you the top three things you need to know every 15 minutes.
And you can count on us for any severe weather information, breaking news, or traffic red alerts immediately when they happen.
Now, the Mid-Morning Mic Check with Mike Rogers and Austin York on DFW's number one for news, traffic, and weather. News Radio 1080 KRLD. Depend on it.
And here we go. It's a Thursday morning at KRLD, August 6th. It's the Mid-Morning Mic Check. Mike Rogers, Austin York with you on this International Root Beer Float Day.
Oh, well, I've like had a few of those in my life.
That's good. And if that doesn't suit you, then it's National IPA Day.
Okay, now that's a different kind of beer.
Beer, right. That is,
I'm not a big fan of both.
No, I find that the IPAs to be a little bitter.
Yeah, and you get a little drunk. You start tasting too many of those things if you're not a big beer fan. By the way, I have to say, my dad listened to the show yesterday, and he was terribly disappointed with my answers for labor-intensive jobs, considering all the ones that he's had.
All right,
he's like, you haven't worked a lick in your life.
Well, I mean, your most labor-intensive, you said, was filing.
Filing or the bumper cars.
Yeah, well,
he was in Vietnam. He had to pull those latrines, those big buckets of all that crap out there, and start it on fire.
He wins.
Oh, I can't believe they made him do that.
That's just, well,
the grunts had to do that back in the day.
Literally grunts.
Lit it on fire.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, can you imagine the smell?
So, yeah.
Yeah, he wins.
I wouldn't, by far, hands down. That beats my construction work by a mile, too.
Yeah, poor in East Texas ain't the way to go sometimes.
All right, we got a good show for you today. There is a new scandal at the Women's Tour de France. I didn't know they had a Women's Tour de France.
I thought there was just the Tour de France. Everybody can jump on in. I thought the French were very progressive and inclusive. What's going on over there?
This one, it's Women's Tour de France, and apparently there is a problem with some of the contestants using
doping?
Specially designed bras.
Oh,
to get, it's kind of like at the Olympics. Remember when the guys were down their pants?
Get a little extra lift.
Fabric and lift on the side.
That's right.
That's what's going on. So we're going to get into that. State Fair of Texas. Brother, that's coming up.
Yeah, we're going to be there every day. We always are.
And they've got the, later this hour, we'll get into the semifinalists and the Big Tex Choice Awards, some of the new foods at the State Fair. As always, your input is welcome at 945-766-1080. You can text or call. We'd love to hear from you. We start this morning, though, with the president's pick for attorney general, who is already the acting attorney general, but his confirmation is facing a new roadblock.
Maine Senator Susan Collins, who's in a tough re-election fight, announcing she's a no and will vote against Blanche, saying the Department of Justice has become increasingly political, adding Mr. Blanche has taken several actions that have further eroded the department's independence. Without Collins, Blanche can likely only afford to lose one more Republican vote, and at least two others are still on the fence. Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska and Louisiana Senator Bill Cassidy, who has increasingly been defying the president since losing to a Trump-backed primary challenger. The two skeptical senators meeting with Blanche for over an hour late yesterday, but emerging tight-lipped.
Now, in Collins' case, she's been taking a lot of heat in her Senate race for casting the deciding vote that confirmed Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh, who then voted to overturn Roe v. Wade.
Oh, how dare he!
And it may just be an attempt to win back some of those voters who are still angry with her about all that, but Collins, who describes herself as pro-choice, she's saying that she won't vote for Blanche in part because of his promise to ban the mailing of abortion medication.
But she's in that tight race. That's why she's doing this.
Exactly. If she weren't up for re-election this year,
she'd be rubber stamping this, and let's just keep going.
You wouldn't hear a word about it.
You know, these nominations to me are just becoming increasingly political for the last, almost a decade now, where it used to be that whoever the president nominated, that was their guy, whether they liked him or not.
Many times unanimously.
Yeah, and what was it? Especially on the Supreme Court, Ruth Bader Ginsburg got 99 votes.
Right,
that would never happen today.
Speaking of that Senate race in Maine, now we all remember the Graham Plackner story.
Mm-hmm.
This is a guy who was going to be Susan Collins' opponent in November, but a series of scandals forced him to drop out of the race. Well, the Republicans are dealing with a growing scandal of their own, though. It's around a seat that they had considered to be safe this November. It's Ohio Congressman Max Miller. Told you about him. He's up for re-election, facing calls to drop out after being accused accused of abusing his ex-wife and their two-year-old child. But unlike Plattner, who dropped out of the race, Miller says it ain't going to happen with him.
Congressman Max Miller of Ohio is defiant, saying not even President Trump could push him out of his re-election race as he faces abuse allegations from his ex-wife. Miller's ex-wife, Emily, claims he abused her. In a February police report obtained by ABC News, she claims he threw her against a wall, once held a gun to her head, and another time threw hot water on her. Miller says she's lying.
My former wife is engaging in a pattern of reporting incredible, serious, and destructive allegations with absolutely no evidence.
Now, adding to the intrigue here, and we've talked about this, is the fact that Miller's ex is the daughter of Ohio Senator Bernie Moreno, who is one of the ones calling for Miller to drop out.
My bet is he's going to drop out, and this is just the amount of pressure. You remember how much pressure it took Graham Plattner to actually go out?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's when the money dried up, and they said, you're not going to get anything, and more allegations came out, and that's going to happen here. I think Mike Johnson probably is having a meeting with him and say, look, let's figure out your exit strategy, and we're doing it now.
Got a little cal sheet for you. What happens first? Max Miller drops out, or Jeanine Pirro gets fired?
Oh, Pirro first. I don't even know, because I think Pirro might just take herself out, really, because say, I'm done with this, and she'll go back. She's got a good job wherever, OAN or Fox News or Newsmax. She can get a job there.
This Max Miller story is not the only bad headline for the Buckeye State, though. The child endangerment case, known as the House of Horrors, has put new attention on laws establishing a minimum age for marriage. And that is because in this case in Ohio, in which 16 children ranging in age from 18 months to 18 years were found living in a single room, it turns out they all had the same mother. She is one of the four people arrested in the case. 33-year-old Elizabeth Siders. Now, let's let that sink in for a minute.
33,
and she had 16 kids.
It was all hers?
It wasn't? Oh, how is that even possible? Well, she got married when she was just 15 years old in West Virginia.
West Virginia.
Where, at the time, there was no minimum age. Ooh. Now there is, although it's still just 16. Same as Texas, by the way. Ohio, meanwhile, currently it's 70. But lawmakers are now debating a bill that would raise it to 18. It's all reminiscent of the original House of Horrors out in California, where 13 kids were rescued from their parents' home back in 2018. Well, in an exclusive interview, News Nation's Brian Enton spoke with one of those kids, Jalissa Turpin, who's now 19.
In Ohio, the mom, through the courts, is fighting to try to see her children.
Yeah.
You know, she wants to see them.
Yeah.
Says she loves them.
Sorry. Okay. Sorry.
No, it's okay. But what do you think of that?
I think that is really dumb. And I do not think, I've seen people saying, oh, she's the victim or whatever. I believe my mom was a victim, but that does not give her any, any excuse to do what she did to her kids.
Jalissa says even seeing her mother in court made her ill.
I didn't ever know my mom, and she was always in another room. I never actually saw her or had a conversation. The only time I ever saw her face pretty much was when she was coming towards me to abuse me or beat me up or whatever, you know, something bad. I would go to court sometimes and I would see just the back of her head or even just talking about the stuff with my parents, and I would get physically sick where I would throw up because of the anxiety from it, and it really was hard to heal when I was okay, let's start healing, but then I'm gonna see her in a week, you know, or I'm gonna be in court talking about her in a week. It was hard.
Now, they were rescued, Jalissa and her siblings, they had to learn everything: reading, writing, how to eat a meal, sitting at the table,
basic etiquette,
even something as simple as how to have a friend.
Did you know that you could have a friend?
While I was in the house?
Yeah.
No. No. I don't know. I thought that people having friends and neighbors talking to each other and all that stuff, I thought that was fake or just stuff that's in the movies or something. I didn't know that I could actually have a friend. I also didn't know that like school was even normal. I didn't know like where I would get a friend.
But through therapy and God, Jalissa says she has made it to the other side. She just bought her own home and finds healing spending time with her siblings and dog. She believes there will be another side for the Ohio kids too.
Like it literally is like so hard to adjust, and like for these kids in Ohio, them coming out into this world when they've been isolated their whole life, is it's gonna be hard. Like as much as I wish I could be like, it won't be that hard, it'll be easy, it's that's not the case. It's gonna be really hard.
You know, I have to say, this girl, she was 11 when they were rescued. What a messed up childhood.
She's 19 now. She sounds great.
She sounds like she's got it together.
Both of us were commenting on how well spoken she was, how eloquent she was, considering what she went through. She's got a house now. She just bought her own house.
No,
at 19
for her.
That's crazy. Good though.
By the way, there are only 3 states left in which there is no minimum age for marriage. Mississippi.
I would have guessed that.
New Mexico.
That's surprising.
And you wouldn't guess this one. California. Now, in each of those states, minors have to have parental consent and a judge's approval. But beyond that, there's no numerical limit.
Yeah, my mom said I could. So yeah. Just sign it off. All right.
When we come back, off to Oxnard we go, where 1 week into training camp for the Cowboys, Brian brought us. He's going to have the latest for us coming up as the Mid-Morning Mic Check continues.
A deep dive into the day's top stories, weekdays from 10 to noon. This is the Mid-Morning Mic Check with Mike Rogers and Austin York on News Radio 1080 KRLD.
And the Mid-Morning Mic Check continues this Thursday morning, and we go out to Oxnard.
Yeah.
Every morning during training camp at 10:20, we bring in our Cowboys insider, Brian Broaddus, former
Super Bowl champ,
now 105.3 The Fan. And he's with us right now. Brian, in your honor, I've worn a quarter zip today.
That's right. It's a little, because it's freezing in this studio.
And I could be down on the beach looking good. How you doing today?
I'm doing excellent. It's nice to hear that the temperature in our building is once again back to where it's roughly about 62 degrees in those studios.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of strange when we're at home and we walk through the parking lot and everybody's looking at us like, what are these dudes doing wearing
parkas?
And yeah, exactly. But it's good to hear that you got the quarter zip on. You might just go with the vest this morning here in Oxford. Maybe not the full quarter zip, but we'll go with the best today. But everything's going well. Thanks.
All right, let's start with the new video gate.
That's
right. This is Christian Parker.
Well, apparently the team told the media, you are not allowed to film. And then the media got upset with this. And then Jerry said, oh, go ahead, film whatever you want. Am I getting this right? Can you explain this controversy?
Yeah, and listen, I can fully understand it because I got this really cool new device called an Osmo, which is like this camera that can film and it moves. And it's a beautiful piece of equipment that a 62-year-old man is probably not very accustomed to using, but I'm getting the hang of it. And yeah, there's ways that you can film practice beautifully with it, you know? And, you know, but that's the thing about this is camp and, you know, training camp, and there's people want access and people want to be able to see, and there's people, you know, they're listening to us right now that are sitting on a beach somewhere, you know, somewhere else, or they're, you know, up at their fishing, and you know, they're just, there's people want to know what's going on with the football team, and they also want to be able to take their phones out or their iPads, whatever they need, and they want to be able to say, well, what happened to practice today, you know? And so, you know, that's the thing that the big issue is that when I worked for DallasCowboys.com, we did a show called Training Camp Live, and we actually filmed like part of the practice. Like we took, you know, the one-on-one period, or we took the team period, and we showed the fans, we gave them like 12 minutes of, hey, this is what's going on at practice right now. And then Sean Payton, who was coaching at the Saints, called me one day and he goes, hey man, that training camp live stuff you do is incredible. That's incredible work. And I'm like, you watch that? And he goes, yeah, every day I sit down at lunch and watch you guys. And it clicked to me that like, okay, here's the head coach of the New Orleans Saints watching Cowboys practice. Is probably not a good thing.
Shut it down.
And so, yeah, so I immediately went to Derek Eagleton at the time and I said, Derek, I go, Sean Payton told me he's really enjoying our version of Training Camp Live. And so when you're working on the .com side of things, you really have to be very mindful of, you know, it's the team's site. It's, you know, you got to be mindful. You got to try and help your coaches. But what you're having right now is everybody has access to these practices. You could come and watch denounce these practices, and you could be a fan in the stands, and you could take your iPhone 16 out, and you can film drills, and you can do stuff, you can post it, and you can, so it's the media is trying to do their job, and we're mindful of it to a point. But also, though, the fans are filming and they're posting stuff, too. And listen, Pat McAfee, at ESPN, he posted a clip the other day from practice. And it wasn't from a Todd Archer or John Machado or Calvin Watkins or Brian Broaddus. It was a random fan clip. Oh, and so if you if you have a camera and you're sitting in the stands and you're filming practice, you can post whatever you want. And this is the issue. And some teams are having to deal with this right now. Green Bay is asking the media and their fans not to film practice. The Houston Texans are asking the media. They're like, hey, listen, if you really want to help the team, please don't do this.
Right.
But we're also about content, man. We've got bills to pay. We've got, we've got sponsors that are expecting us to deliver on the things that we promise we do. Hey, we've got the best training camp coverage in the Metroplex. And there's a reason why, because we're willing to go the extra mile. But, the team, the coaches are like, hey, we really don't want you filming this stuff. And they're not wrong. They're not wrong. But on the flip side of that, Jerry and Steven realize that, listen, we do spend a lot of money to come out here, but if they're doing things right on this field right now that they're going to do in the Giants game, well,
that's on them.
A little bit of trouble.
Yeah, that's right.
That's on them. Yeah, for sure. But it's been a deal where for like the first 10 minutes before we went on the field, there was this band. We all said, okay, cool. We now know the rules. And then some of the media members went to Tad and said, hey, we can't do this. And Jerry and Steven agreed with him. So we're back on the filming policy, but we have to be a little bit more mindful of everything. We're not like, I'll film all 40 minutes of practice if you let, but I think I need to be a little bit more mindful of what we're doing.
Yeah, help the Cowboys win, man. That's what we need.
There we go.
Jerry likes those clicks, right? Hey, Brian, thank you so much again. As always, we're going to catch up with you again tomorrow morning at 10:20, more from training camp in Oxnard. That's our Cowboys insider, Brian Brought it here on KRLD. All right, when we come back, hackers, possibly Iranian hackers, targeting water systems in the U.S. So how do you fight the hackers? Well, you bring in your own hackers, of course. Hack the hackers. That's straight ahead as the Mid-Morning Mic Check continues on KRLD.
The Mid-Morning Mic Check with Mike Rogers and Austin York on DFW's number one for news, traffic, and weather. News Radio 1080 KRLD. Depend on it.
Well, it started just a few weeks ago when someone launched a cyber attack on 30 different municipal water systems in the state of Minnesota. Since then, authorities in almost a dozen other states have reported similar activity with their water systems. Now, U.S. intelligence officials suspect, they don't have proof, but they suspect that Iran may have been involved.
By the way, is everything digital now? You can hack into anything, even the water system?
Evidently.
No levers anymore?
Bring in ABC's Jim Ryan for more on the story. Jim, this has happened before, right?
Yeah, there is some precedent to this, of course, Mike. Remember back in early 2024, the town of Muleshoe, up toward the Texas Panhandle, it's thought that Russian-backed hackers got into that water supply system. They caused the downtown water tower to overflow for a time. There was flooding in the downtown street. They did get it all corrected after a short time, but it really illustrates what can go wrong. 50,000 water supply companies or departments in the whole United States, most of them are small and rural. Most of them don't have the kind of money to spend. After all, they're fighting for budget dollars with the local police department, fire department, the school district in some cases, and they can't afford cybersecurity. So that's really what we're up against right now. The cyber attacks coming from overseas and hitting us right where it counts the most, Mike.
I've still never been able to figure out why the Russians targeted Muleshoe, but what cities are we talking about this time, Jim?
Well, there are cities in Atlanta, cities across Michigan that are looking at that. There are something like 17 states now where this has been happening. Thought it was a dozen yesterday. The number continues to rise. So, it's primarily small water departments again, but some larger ones as well. But why Muleshoe? It's a good question. I think maybe because it was there, they just wanted to show that they can do this, and sure enough, they did. Again, that was tracked back to Russian hackers, but no real explanation as to why Russia was was doing this in 2024 and why Muleshoe was the one that was picked. The same kind of lack of explanation for why any municipal water supply was chosen this time, apparently by the Iranians.
Yes. Now, tell me about that. How have the Iranians come to be suspected here?
The war part of it, I think. Cybersecurity specialists within the U.S. government are saying that that's where their evidence is leading. Now, I mean, there's still some dispute about it. President Trump says he doesn't think it was the Iranians. Others inside the infrastructure are saying that it probably was. But I think that's kind of where it goes, that it stands to reason that it would be Iran. Although there are hackers, state-sponsored and otherwise, around the world. So we may find out it had nothing at all to do with Iran.
So what are some of the impacts that we're seeing on these water systems? Is there a drop in pressure, that sort of thing?
Well, drop in pressure. There could be some, you know, in the worst case scenario, beyond what happened in Muleshoe with the water tower overflowing, there could be some issues with water quality. You know, it doesn't take much for water pressure to drop, and that allows contaminants to get into the water system. So, I mean, there are some real nightmare scenarios out there waiting. It hasn't happened yet, but yet is the operative here, Mike, and certainly they're trying to keep this from happening. Now, so how do you combat this? I mean, the local citizen, you and I, the people who are consumers of the local water department, there's not much we can do, but there is a group of hackers, white hat hackers, as they're known, folks who are specialists in this kind of thing, and they're going around the country as volunteers and sitting down with municipal water supplies and the people who run them and telling them, look, here's how you need to fortify your defenses, beefing up your internet security so that people can't hack into it from outside, and then putting that into place, even bringing in some equipment to help do that. So, yeah, there are white hats out there trying to combat this sort of thing.
I guess the really scary thing is if they can hack their way into a water system, what's next? The sky's the limit, I guess.
It is. Yeah. You know, nuclear power plants, potentially, even standard coal burning power plants. Who knows? But I think you could sit down and draw out all sorts of scenarios, and each one is more terrifying than the last.
Indeed. Jim, thank you so much. Appreciate it. That's ABC's Jim Ryan with us. Like you said, I mean, everything
is hackable.
Hack their way into anything now.
That's just what the crazy thing is. And it's great, this banking system and everything. Your money is more accessible. That's what I always worry about as somebody who's just doing everyday life. But I always think, what if I really got hacked and they took everything? I mean, what would happen? Well, and it's easier and easier to do these days.
You want to bring, this is modern warfare. Do you want to bring a country to its knees?
Oh my God,
in
hit the
21st
water supply,
century, that's it.
Anything like that.
That's how you do it. Coming up, here's an amazing factoid. We are less than 2 months away from the opening of the State Fair of Texas.
Didn't we just end the State Fair of Texas just a few weeks ago?
Listen, brother, you can't talk about the fair without talking about the food. Big Tex Choice Award finalists, we'll talk about that straight ahead on the Mid-Morning Mic Check.
The Mid-Morning Mic Check with Mike Rogers and Austin York on DFW's number one for news, traffic, and weather. News Radio 1080 KRLD. Depend on it.
You're talking about the new salmonella outbreak, jalapenos.
Oh, man, I know that's going to really affect some people. They love their jalapenos.
Well, Chipotle and Qdoba.
Those are some pretty big places.
Uh-huh. They pulled the jalapenos off their menu, at least for now.
I know Taco Bell's like, thank God.
I know, right? No salmonella at the State Fair of Texas, though, we hope. And they have this morning announced there are 15 finalists in the Big Tex Choice Awards.
Ooh, now some of this is hard. I'm thinking about my clogged arteries just reading some of these things.
These are the new food creations that may or may not be served up at the fair this year. We'll know which ones when the winners are announced later this month.
All right.
But in all, they had 77 items submitted, many by people who work all year long coming up with these creations.
And we've interviewed quite a few of them the last couple of years.
Among the savory finalists, you've got the Burger Chop Tater Taco.
Okay.
This is a taco containing a chopped up burger patty.
That sounds all right.
All right, with cheese, coleslaw, and tater tots.
I'm not a huge coleslaw guy, but I like the tater tots. I'd give that a try.
The Flamin' Crunch Pizza.
Oh, jeez.
This is your basic cheese pizza, but after it comes out of the oven, they top it with jalapeno queso blanco, buffalo ranch dressing, and Flamin' Hot Cheetos dust.
They forget the cyclospora. This is explosive diarrhea. You eat that.
That's right. This is amazing. make. Cyclospora is tame in comparison to this.
Just eat some of this.
Flamin' Crunch Pizza. Among the sweet finalists, forget all the rest, because Fletcher's, which rarely changes its menu, is out this year with a chocolate corny dog.
Okay.
Instead of a weenie inside, the breading is filled with milk chocolate fudge. I'm a big no on that.
You don't like fudge at all. I don't know why. I thought you have a sweet tooth a little bit too, don't you?
Not fudge.
Not fudge though. All right.
I'm not a fudge guy.
It's covered with something that instead of the breading, it's some kind of jelly thing.
I don't know why. Well, hopefully it'll be better than the pickled beer.
Oh yeah, yeah. That was. I mean, anything could be better. I think that was just an experiment. I don't even know if they're going to bring that back next year. After us, after she brought it to us and we drank a little bit, she saw our faces. We're a little bitter.
We love the Fletcher's Amber.
Oh,
you know,
absolutely.
We don't want, but that beer was rough.
Yeah.
New category this year: drink. A drink finalist: a cornflake, Kellogg's cornflakes in a milkshake.
I guess
a soft serve peach Bellini float and something called a tropical cocoa fresca.
I can only imagine, but I don't know.
The affair opens September 25th. That is 7 weeks from tomorrow, the state fair time. And
you know we're going to have to try a lot of this stuff, so
I know.
Better be ready. I can tell you, I always bring some Imodium. Just in case.
Just a stash, right?
Yeah, just in case. A stash up on it.
So I think we're going to be in the same location in the, what building? The Taste of Texas building?
The agricultural stuff was.
Yeah, so we'll see. Details to come, but we're going to be there every flipping day, every weekday anyway.
And we enjoy meeting every one of you guys, always come out.
So mark that on your calendar. State fair time, you want to come out and say hey. Mid-morning mic check on KRLD. They're going to continue after this short break. Mike Rogers, Austin York, stick around. We'll be right back.